Chapter 16, 0710 hours. A thick wall of heat hit Porter as he stepped out onto the rooftop. He blinked sweat out of his eyes and glanced around to establish his bearings. The rooftop was 40 meters long and 25 meters wide, roughly half the length of a football pitch and half as wide. There was a water tower in the middle of the rooftop, with a set of concrete steps leading up to it and an iron ladder nailed to one side. An air conditioning duct snaked across the dusty ground, with several smaller feeds and pipes branching off in every direction. A meter-high parapet ran the perimeter of the rooftop, with square drainage holes built into the wall, spaced at 1 meter intervals. Each one was big enough to fit a gun barrel through. Porter clambered over the aircon duct and sprinted over to a section of the parapet overlooking the north of the hotel. He worked his way along the roof, scoping out the ground below. 60 meters to the north of the hotel stood the access road. Porter could see the abandoned security cordon and the two dead Nigerian soldiers. Directly beyond the sandbags, on an east-west axis, was the Cape Road, a horizontal grey bar amid patches of brown and green. An abandoned garage with a blue-painted roof was situated on the other side of the Cape Road, at Porter's 1 o'clock, 200 meters from the hotel. 8 clapped-out motors were parked in front of the garage, rotting under the sun like metal carcasses. 100 meters further to the east, at his 2 o'clock, Porter spotted a row of half-finished buildings with piles of festering rubbish heaped in the narrow alleys. Urban tumbleweed. The derelict structures backed onto a banana tree plantation, 400 meters away. East of the plantation stood the main roundabout, with the big baobab tree in the middle, 600 meters from the hotel. Further east, at his 3 o'clock, Porter could just about see the faint outline of the Aberdeen Road Bridge, a mile in the distance. As he looked on, 4 rapid bursts of gunfire split the air. Porter flicked his gaze back to the banana plantation to the northeast. He saw a group of rebels moving down the road parallel to the tree line, 400 meters from the hotel. 20 of them, Porter counted. They were wearing brightly coloured shirts and moving in an asymmetrical pattern as they fired wildly, discharging bursts from their AK-47s at a cluster of a dozen or so civilians running for their lives across the Cape Road. 3 of the civilians were cut down by the raking bursts of gunfire. The rest ran in the direction of the hotel, desperate to escape the killing frenzy. There was no pattern to the rebels' approach, as far as Porter could tell, no tactics of any kind. They were tearing through the streets and murdering anyone in their wake in an uncoordinated charge, fueled by drugs and bloodlust, heading straight for the ambassador's hotel.
"Over there," Bald said, appearing at Porter's shoulder. "Another 20 X-rays, east of us."
Porter looked in the direction his mucker was pointing, shading his eyes against the rising sun. 600 meters east, a second group of rebels was streaming towards the hotel from the direction of the roundabout. The black shapes of several slaughtered civilians dotted the ground either side of the Cape Road. Half of the second group of rebels hurried along the Cape Road, racing after the first group of rebels to the east. The other half broke south and charged across the open ground towards the eastern side of the hotel.
"More coming this way!"
one of the Belgians to the south cried. Porter looked towards the Belgian. He had a shock of blonde hair in a widow's peak, muscles like granite, and skin so bronze it looked spray on. The guy looked like Dolph Lundgren's long-lost twin.
"How many?" Porter asked.
Spray tan strained his eyes.
"I count at least 15.
Porter hurried over for a better look. He spotted a tight cluster of rebels manoeuvring in a loose formation through the barren field 300 meters south of the hotel. They were heading for the low wall backing onto the swimming pool and tennis courts at the rear of the hotel grounds. Porter thought,
20 rebels to the north, 20 more to the east, 15 to the south, at least 55 rebels in total.
With more on the way, judging from the shooting and voices in the distance.
"And there's only 8 of us."
He tensed his neck muscles and turned to the other guys.
"This is what we're going to do. We'll work in pairs."
He pointed at Nilis.
"You'll go with Bob Tully and take the east. Take 2 of the Belgians with you. The other 2 can cover the south. Jock, you're with me,"
Porter added, turning to Bald.
"We'll take the north. That way we'll have all the approaches covered.
Bald smiled grimly.
About time we gave these pricks a good kicking.
Porter turned back to the Belgians.
Kill anything with two legs and a weapon. We've got the advantage of surprise, since the rebels won't have spotted us yet. Make those early rounds count.
No problem, said Nilis, giving a thumbs up and smiling.
Bald rolled his eyes at the guy.
Oh, one more thing, Porter said, looking at each of the other Belgians in turn. Keep an eye out for any fuckers packing RPGs.
He tipped his head at Nilis.
Your mates know what an RPG looks like.
Yes, we used them in training before. Don't worry, we know what to look for.
Good. You see an X-ray carrying one, you make sure you put them down. They're the main threat. The AKs only fire 7.62mm short. At this range, they won't be able to do much damage. But if they get one of them RPGs on target, anyone inside the hotel room won't stand a fucking chance.
There was no need for Nilis to translate. His four mates all spoke decent English and understood Porter's instructions. They swiftly divided into two pairs and spread out across the rooftop, lugging their SLRs and spare clips. Tully and Nilis raced over to the section of the parapet overlooking the northeast corner of the hotel, facing out towards the roundabout, with one pair of Belgians setting up shop at the southeast corner. Spray Tan and the fourth Belgian took up their positions on the south side of the rooftop. Porter and Bald turned back to the north-facing wall and peered down at the Cape Road. The first wave of rebels were 350 metres from the hotel now. All 20 of them were rushing across the main road, showing no caution, gesturing at the access road with their machetes and assault rifles. Any half-decent soldiers would have been making their approach behind cover, thought Porter. But these guys weren't trained operators, he reminded himself. They were rapists and thieves and murderers. They weren't technically minded. All they wanted to do was kill the civvies trapped inside the hotel.
Not today.
As he watched, half a dozen of the rebels surged ahead of their mates. Four of them were clutching AK-47 rifles. The fifth guy wore a replica Liverpool shirt with Heskey on the back and shouldered an RPG launcher. A sixth rebel, wearing a pink skirt, ran close behind the guy with the RPG. He was carrying a bag of spare rockets for the launcher. The lead group of rebels were 300 metres from the front of the hotel now. Porter pointed them out to Bald.
I'm going to drop the one with the RPG, he said calmly. Get him wriggling. I'll slot his mate too. Then you light the rest of the fuckers up. Roger that, mate.
Bald looked on whilst Porter hefted up the SLR and tugged on the bolt handle located on the right-hand side of the receiver. The SLR kachacked as the first round of 7.62mm shunted into the chamber. Porter tucked the stock tight to his right shoulder, with his legs shoulder-width apart and his left arm directly under the rifle supporting its weight. Resting his cheek on the receiver, he peered down the rear iron sighting post and lined up the rebel in the Heskey shirt. The one with the RPG. He was the most immediate threat, because a badly aimed rocket could do a lot more damage than a badly aimed burst of ammo. Heskey was racing to catch up with his mates several metres further ahead of him, with the rebel in the pink skirt running close behind. Porter relaxed his right shoulder, slid his index finger onto the trigger, rested the sights on Heskey's groin. Porter didn't want to kill the rebel. A headshot would merely send the other five rebels running for cover, which was not ideal because moving targets were always trickier to hit than static ones. But if he wounded the rebel, one of the other guys would automatically rush over to help. Simple guerrilla warfare tactics perfected by the Viet Cong against US troops. He took a deep breath, exhaled, fired. The SLR made a satisfying crack as the first round spat out of the snout. The spent jacket flung out of the ejector and landed a few feet away to Porter's right. Down on the main road, Heskey folded at the waist as the round smacked into his balls.
Target down,
Porter reported, keeping his voice flat and steady, like a surgeon giving instructions during an operation. All of his mental and physical energies concentrated on making sure he achieved the maximum kill rate. Heskey released his grip on the RPG and fell to the tarmac in the middle of the Cape Road, squirming in agony and screaming to the others for help. The bait was set.
Now I just need someone to take it.
The four rebels ahead of the wounded rebel stopped dead in their tracks and glanced around the hotel, looking for the direction the shot had come from. Several meters behind them, the guy in the pink skirt dropped the bag of rockets and bolted forward. His instincts were kicking in. He wouldn't have a clue where the shot had come from, Porter knew. The guy probably wasn't even aware a shot had been fired. But he would have seen his mucker tumble to the ground, and his first instinct would be to go over and help his mate. His second instinct would be to pick up the RPG launcher and get off a shot in revenge. It was basic human psychology. Porter hovered the SLR sights over the injured rebel and waited for the guy in the pink skirt to rush over. He was unnaturally calm and focused. He was in control of the situation, setting the stage for the next shot, directing the action, waiting for the target to make himself static. Porter counted to two. He watched the second rebel move directly into his sights. The guy stopped, reached down for the RPG launcher. Then Porter pulled the trigger again. The SLR kicked up. There was a puff of bright red behind the rebel's head, or what was left of it. The guy jerked and did the dead man's dance. He dropped like a marionette with the strings cut, landing next to the wounded rebel. The four rebels ahead saw their friend's head explode and simultaneously turned towards the rooftop, hefted up their rifles and returned fire. They didn't bother to aim properly. They just emptied bursts in the general direction the shooting was coming from. The rounds struck harmlessly wide and low of Porter and Bald's positions.
"Nail those fuckers, Jock," Porter said. "About fucking time," Bald said.
He stepped into view at Porter's right, squeezed the bipod legs together, and folded them into the clip on the underside of the barrel. Bald propped the gun on top of the breeze block parapet and adjusted the dial for the sights. Then he pressed the safety button above the pistol grip, switching it from safe to fire. Down on the Cape Road, the four rebels who had been returning fire ran for cover at the slum dwellings north of the road. Bald depressed the trigger. The jimpy made a deep, thunderous roar, blasting Porter's eardrums, like a chainsaw cutting through a car engine. The GPMG muzzle flashed. The first couple of two-round bursts fell short of the targets by 9 or 10 meters. The fifth round was the tracer, the marking round, guiding the shooter towards the targets. It scorched through the air like a bright red arrow pointing to treasure on a map, leaving a puff of smoke on the ground. The four rebels in the lead group ran on, straining every sinew to reach cover, like sprinters leaning forward at the finishing line. They were fast, but not fast enough. Bald followed the line of the tracer, adjusted his elevation, aimed. The rebels were 10 meters from the slums when he let rip again. Bald unloaded a dozen rounds at the rebels in two quick bursts. At 800 meters, a burst from the GPMG was capable of smashing through solid brick walls. At less than half that distance, the rebels didn't stand a chance. The bullets literally chopped one guy in half, severing his torso at the waist in a spray of blood and viscera. The brass punched holes the size of Coke cans in another target, the velocity of the rounds sucking his guts out through his exit wounds. Bald kept firing. The other two rebels disappeared in a cloud of dust and blood and bone fragments. Porter turned his attention to the other rebels in the first wave, 50 meters further east. Some of them saw their mates getting slotted and ran for cover at the banana plantation north of the Cape Road. One rebel, with a bright yellow beanie hat, dropped to a knee beside the road, then aimed his RPG launcher at the rooftop. Bald raked him down with a four-round burst before he could fire. The impact knocked the guy off his feet. His right arm jerked up, and his finger automatically depressed the trigger. The RPG hissed out of the launcher and burred across the road, thumping into a vehicle parked at the side of the street. The backblast from the RPG engulfed the rebel immediately behind the target, tearing at his flesh and ripping off his left leg at the knee. One of his mates heard his screams, rushed over, and started to drag the wounded rebel away from the kill zone. Porter put a round through the guy's groin and watched him keel over, writhing in agony on the ground. He kept the sights trained on the wounded rebel, looking to see if any of his mates came to the rescue. But none of the rebels emerged from cover. They had learned their lesson. They had seen what happened to the last guy who tried to help his injured mate and wisely decided to stay out of sight behind the banana trees. They were getting plenty of on-the-job training today.
9 targets down, Porter thought. 45 left.
He glanced over his shoulder to see how the other guys were getting on. Over on the eastern side of the parapet, Tully and Nealis were putting down a steady burst of rounds on the rebels advancing from the direction of the roundabout. The pair of Belgians stationed at the southeast corner were dropping the targets, trying to make their approach from the direction of the athletics track. Spray Tan and the 4th Belgian knocked down the rebels advancing from the direction of the barren field to the south of the hotel. The Belgians were communicating with one another in their own language, operating like a separate entity from the other guys. Their shots were striking the enemy with impressive regularity, Porter noticed. None of the Belgians showed any sign of fear or nerves at the situation they were facing. Like pros, he thought. Nealis took another shot and pumped a fist in delight at scoring a kill. He looked over at Porter and gave the thumbs up, grinning with delight.
Prick, Bald muttered under his breath. He can fucking shoot, though. So can his mates.
I thought they were supposed to be rusty, Porter said.
Bald shrugged.
Maybe they're not labourers.
What do you mean?
Maybe they're with the Belgian military. Maybe they're special forces. Either way, I couldn't give a toss, as long as they know how to fire a weapon.
Porter looked back to the north and trained his sights on the banana plantation. He caught sight of 4 enemies scuttling forward from the tree line, running low while their mates at the trees put down covering fire. The rebels were making for the slum dwellings to the west, Porter realized. The reckless bursts from their muckers at the plantation landed well short, hitting the front of the hotel several floors below the rooftop.
These guys might have the upper hand in numbers and firepower, he thought, but they can't shoot for shit.
Movement, he said to Bald. 1 o'clock, 4 X-rays heading for the slums. I see the bastards.
Bald zeroed in on the targets and put down a rapid series of 2- and 3-round bursts with the jimpy. The bullets thudded into the ground, throwing up geysers of smoke and dirt, forcing the rebels to turn around and head back for the trees in an attempt to escape the blistering gunfire. Porter dropped one guy wearing a Chicago Bulls jersey, nailing him in the leg. The man fell forward, pawing at his rag-order ankle as he screamed at his mates for help. He was still crying when Porter put a single round in the back of his head. His skull exploded in a shower of gristle and brain matter. Porter cut down a 2nd, lanky guy wearing shades before he could scramble for cover, firing 2 and nailing him in the upper back. He fell away, the shades tumbling from his face. Bald arced the jimpy across and pulverized the other 2 retreating rebels, their bodies thrashing wildly as the rounds smashed into them, severing another of the targets at the waist in a glistening bright red shower of entrails.
"More X-rays incoming!" Tully shouted. 3 o'clock! 30 of them, 600 metres away! Great, Bald muttered. Just what we fucking need.
Just then, a muzzle flashed at Porter's 12 o'clock. In the next instant, a volley of bullets struck much closer to the rooftop, 6 of them striking the air conditioning duct 2 metres to Porter's left, glancing off the metal sheeting and making a din like 1,000 hammers banging against a lead pipe. Porter arced his sights across the road and glimpsed another flash coming from the side of the garage west of the tree line. As he watched, 3 more rebels crept out from behind the banana trees, snaked around to the back of the garage before he could line up a shot.
They're changing their tactics, Porter realized. They know they're getting walloped whenever they set foot on the main road. Now they're trying to sneak around us instead.
He pointed the garage out to Bald.
X-rays on the move, 300 metres to the front. The building with the blue roof. Get some rounds down on the fuckers.
With fucking pleasure, mate.
Bald trained the GPMG sights on the dwelling. 2 shooters fired rounds at the rooftop before ducking out of sight. The rebels figured they were safe behind the side wall of the garage. They were wrong. Bald emptied 10 3-round bursts at the wall, aiming for a point midway up, roughly level with the enemy's torsos. The bullets chewed through the concrete as if it was made of papier-mâché, punching a hole in the wall a foot in diameter and knocking down the rebels hidden behind like they were bowling pins in an alley. The targets collapsed in a tangle of limbs and clothes. Five more rebels scurried forward from the plantation to the garage. Two of them stopped to fire their rockets at the rooftop before they ducked behind cover. The rockets corkscrewed way off target and burred high over Bald and Porter's heads before whistling into the distance. Bald dropped both of the rebels with a jimpy. Bullets tore through the concrete wall, riddling the targets with hot lead.
"How many more of these fuckers are there?" he said.
Porter had no answer to that. He faced forward and searched for his next target. The rebels were definitely acting more cautiously now, he thought. They were shrinking behind cover as much as possible, loosing off bursts at the rooftop. But they were still crap shots. They were still operating in small, uncoordinated gangs, rather than attacking the hotel in an organized military pattern.
"As long as they keep this up," thought Porter, "we've got a chance of holding them at bay. But if someone with proper military experience takes command of this lot, we're in fucking trouble."
A three-round burst walloped into the parapet 6 inches to his left, flinging hot dust into his face. Porter looked for the telltale flash of the muzzle to identify the shooter, caught a glimpse of the guy in the periphery of his vision, crouching by the wall of one of the derelict structures at his 1 o'clock. The guy stepped back behind cover before Porter could get a shot off. Porter didn't panic. He just kept his hand steady, trained the SLR's iron sight at the spot where he'd last seen the rebel, racked the handle just enough to cock the hammer, and waited. He didn't have to wait long. 2 seconds later, the guy popped his head out from the side of the dwelling. He was still hefting up his AK-47 when Porter squeezed the trigger in a smooth, controlled movement, keying into thousands of hours he'd spent on the field firing ranges in Brecon. A hot tongue of flame licked out of the SLR snout. There was a spray of red mist behind the target as the bullet bored through the man's skull before exiting out of the back of his head, like someone shaking a bottle of Veuve Clicquot, then uncorking it. Now Porter glimpsed 2 more rebels scuttling around the back of the banana trees. They were heading towards the easternmost dwelling, taking the place of their slotted mate. He swept the SLR across, lined up the first guy in the metal sights, and nailed him in the chest. The target was still falling away as Porter emptied 2 rounds in the back of the second rebel moments before he reached cover. The guy tumbled forward, blood spraying out from his exit wounds in bright red torrents.
13 rounds down, Porter reminded himself. 7 left in the clip.
"Second wave approaching," Tully shouted from the eastern side of the rooftop. 400 meters.
Porter said,
"How many guys will this lot sacrifice until they piss off home?"
"They won't,"
Tully wiped sweat from his brow.
"They're like rats, fella. They'll keep coming until they find a way through. They won't stop until they're all dead."
Porter gritted his teeth and turned back to the rooftop. He looked towards the second wave of enemies approaching the hotel from the direction of the roundabout. He counted 30 of them, moving forward in a fast, loose formation. Bald raked the approaching targets with a few bursts from the jimpy, killing 3 in quick succession and scattering the rest. Porter traced his sights back to the north, concentrating his fire on the patch of open ground between the banana trees and the slum buildings, dropping any rebels who tried to make a run for cover. Bald peppered the plantation with furious bursts from the jimpy, forcing the rebels massing there to displace. The 2 operators were working like a well-oiled machine, anticipating each other's moves and providing covering fire the moment either one of them needed to reload. The ground around their feet became littered with spent brass. The air was filled with the continuous crack and whip of gunshots and the hysterical cries of the wounded and dying.
"What's happening with the evacuation?"
Bald asked, glancing over his shoulder at the crash door as he spoke, as if he expected to see Tannen come rushing out at any moment with news.
"No fucking idea. Let's deal with these bastards first."
"What happens if we run out of ammo before the rebels run out of bodies to throw at us?"
"We won't," Porter said. "It's just a matter of time till help gets here."
But in truth, he had been thinking the same thing as Bald. If the rebels keep attacking us, eventually we're going to have to start conserving ammo, he thought.
Even these idiots soon figure out that we're running low on rounds. When that happens, we're going to be in the shit, big time.
By now, the sun had fully risen above the bay, bleaching the sky an acid blue. Porter glanced at his G-Shock and was amazed to see it was a few minutes past 8 o'clock, which meant they'd been putting rounds down on the enemy for over an hour. But the rebels showed no signs of giving up their assault. 10 or so rebels from the second wave had managed to advance across the gap from the banana trees to the slum dwellings, while the other 15 rebels bunkered down at the plantation to provide covering fire, unleashing erratic volleys of 762mm short at the rooftop. They were emptying entire clips with no regard for conserving their ammo.
They're being careless with their rounds, Porter noted, which could only mean one thing. They must have a lot more ammo than us.
By 9 o'clock in the morning, the rebels' gunfire had become increasingly accurate. At least 20 enemies had migrated from the slum dwellings to the garage directly north of the hotel, taking up firing points that brought them closer into range of the rooftop. A four-round burst landed dangerously close, slapping into the wall several inches to the right of Porter. The rebels were also shrinking back behind cover before Porter could put the drop on them.
12 o'clock, he said to Bald. The garage. The old car's outside.
Bald dropped to his front and folded out the legs on the GPMG bipod. Then he pointed the muzzle through the drainage hole located midway up the parapet and rattled off shots at a group of three rebels crouched behind one of the abandoned motors in front of the building. Still, the rebels kept pouring forward. Tight clusters of 6 or 10 arrived to reinforce their mates at the plantation, allowing the other rebels to scurry forward under suppressive fire. By mid-morning, the enemy had managed to advance to within 300 meters of the hotel. Half a dozen had reached cover inside the garage itself. Bald and Porter kept applying the pressure with frequent well-aimed bursts. More than 20 bodies now lay sprawled across the ground north of the hotel. Porter dropped another rebel, emptied his clip, and grabbed a fresh mag from his trouser pocket. He was on his 4th clip now, which meant he had expended more than 60 rounds.
8 rounds left before I run out of ammo.
He glanced over at Bald and saw that his mucker had used up 2 belts of ammo. Between them, they had fired almost 500 rounds. Every time one attack stalled under the oppressive weight of gunfire, the rebels switched their efforts to one of the other approaches to the hotel. Twice, Bald and Porter had to migrate across the rooftop to reinforce Spraytan and the 4th Belgian. The operators couldn't clamber over the aircon duct, since that risked making them visible above the parapet to the targets below, so they had to crawl around the vents on all fours to reach the other sides of the roof. Wave after wave of rebels attacked the hotel from the east and south in groups of 6 or 8. Rounds chipped away at the concrete and ricocheted off the water tower.
They're getting closer, Porter thought.
He felt a pang of anxiety in his guts.
Whatever help is on the way, it had better get here soon. Need some help over here, Spraytan called out from the south-facing parapet.
Bald and Porter dashed across the rooftop. Neelis joined them, leaving Tully and the 2 other Belgians to put down fire on the rebels advancing from the northeast at the roundabout. Porter hit the southern-facing wall and peered out through one of the drainage holes. 2 dozen fighters were closing in on the rear of the hotel. They had cleared the barren field to the south and reached the low wall 150 meters away, a short distance beyond the swimming pool. Bald cut down a loose cluster of rebels climbing over the wall with a savage hail of gunfire, the jimpy barrel glowing red as the bullets tore into the enemies, ripping apart their limbs and decapitating some. A couple of the smarter rebels hunkered down behind the far side of the wall. Porter picked them off as soon as they poked their heads out of cover. As Porter searched for his next target, he saw with horror that 2 of the rebels had managed to clear the wall to the rear of the hotel grounds. They were making for a row of storage sheds 100 meters from the back doors leading into the restaurant. These 2 rebels looked to be much younger than the others, Porter noticed. They were no older than 11 or 12 years of age. They were 70 meters from the storage sheds now. Porter tracked the nearest child through his iron sights, a bony kid dressed in a blood-red tank top with a green bandana tied around his shaven head. He looked less like a killer and more like a kid in fancy dress playing Rambo. Porter saw Bald line up the kid.
Do we have to put them down too, Jock? They're just kids, for fuck's sake.
Bald hesitated. Before he could respond, Porter heard the crack of a rifle discharge at his 9 o'clock, as Nealis fired a single shot from his SLR. The bullet smashed into Rambo's gut and sent him tumbling to the ground 50 meters from the sheds. The second kid made the mistake of looking over his shoulder at his mate, stopping momentarily in his tracks, long enough for Nealis to reset his aim and pop the kid through his left shoulder. The second kid dropped to the ground a few paces from Rambo, the two of them clutching their wounds, their hysterical screams piercing the burnt air.
Got them,
Nealis said, grinning. He gave Bald the thumbs up again.
Now, that's what I call shooting, my friend.
The two wounded kids continued wailing. Bald lined up the two screaming children with the jimpy, ready to put them out of their misery. Nealis thrust out a hand and rested it on top of the machine gun, looked Bald hard in the eye.
No, he said. Let them suffer.
He stared at Bald a moment longer. Then he grinned again and went back to his firing position on the parapet, putting down rounds on the dozen or so rebels still picking their way across the hotel grounds. Porter stared at Nealis in disbelief, stunned at the casual way the Belgian had dropped the two kids. Like it was nothing at all, he thought. Like this wasn't the first time he'd killed somebody. Maybe Bald's right, Porter told himself.
Maybe these guys really are Belgian SF. But if that's true, what are they doing here in the first place?
A shout from Tully drew his attention to the north.
Technical, he yelled. 3 o'clock, coming your way, fellas.
Bald and Porter scrambled back across the rooftop, rounds striking the parapet and the aircon duct. Porter slid off the duct half a second before 3 bullets struck the metal sheeting. He ducked low at the northern wall and looked in the direction of the roundabout to the east, saw a dust trail drifting up into the sky. A battered white Hilux was rolling down the Cape Road, doing 20 miles per. 4 rebels were jogging alongside the pickup, using it to cover their approach to the hotel. A 5th guy stood on the platform at the back of the Hilux. He was manning a heavy machine gun mounted on a tripod, ammo belt swaying in the breeze. Even at a distance of 400 meters, Porter readily identified the weapon as a Russian-manufactured Dushka, an anti-aircraft gun chambered for the 12.7 by 108mm round, the Soviet equivalent of the NATO 50-caliber bullet. The kind of weapon that could put down a herd of elephants from a mile away. At a range of 400 meters, it was lethal.
Where the fuck did they get that thing from? Bald said.
Probably one of the army units that defected, Porter said.
Or maybe they grabbed it from one of the armories the bastards looted.
Either way, if the rebels get that thing on target, we're shafted.
Bald and Porter instantly switched their focus to the approaching Hilux. They both swiveled their weapons away from the foot soldiers, training their sights on the immediate threat. Bald unloaded a quick burst at the pickup, aiming for the guy manning the Dushka. Not an easy shot, Porter knew. A fast-moving target at a range of 350 meters with a weapon like the GPMG presented a formidable challenge even for a seasoned SAS man like Bald. The jimpy thundered. The 6 rounds missed their target, striking the tarmac 2 meters to the left of the pickup.
Bastard!
Bald cursed.
300 meters, Porter said. Hurry!
The Hilux driver suddenly hit the gas. The pickup lurched forward, tires screeching as it bulleted west along the road, leaving the 4 gunmen trailing in its wake. In the same beat, the guy manning the Dushka swung the heavy machine gun up and across, and there was a white-hot flash at the muzzle as he discharged 6 rounds at the rooftop. Gases snorted out of the sides of the barrel. A series of deep, low thumps echoed across the sky as the rounds spat out. Porter saw the Hilux jolting with the weapon recoil. Rounds the size of beer bottles pinged out of the side of the ejector. 2 of the bullets chopped into a palm tree directly in front of the hotel, felling it. Three rounds struck higher, slamming into the concrete below the parapet, each one landing higher than the last, like notes in a musical crescendo. The sixth bullet blew a hole in the section of the wall, 6 inches to the left of Porter, smothering his face with bits of concrete and a cloud of hot dust.
"Drop him!" he yelled. "Now, Jock!"
Bald zeroed his aim and fired again. The first two bullets zipped over the top of the Toyota. The next three rounds were the bullseye shots. They smacked into the rebel on the machine gun in a close grouping, ripping open his bowels. His arms fell away from the handles of the heavy machine gun as Bald trained his sights on the front cab and unleashed another five-round burst. The round struck the driver's side door and bored through the metal like a ticket punch through a paper card, nailing the bloke behind the wheel. Blood splashed across the front windscreen. The Hilux veered sharply off to the right, crashing into one of the knackered motors parked in front of the garage. There was the shrieking of twisted metal and the shattering of glass, the car horn sounding its urgent blaring note like a mechanical scream.
"Still fucking got it,"
Bald said, flashing a grin. Porter switched his attention east to the four gunmen in the middle of the road. They suddenly began racing towards the knackered pickup. Porter instinctively grasped what was happening.
"Four X-rays going for the Dushka," he said. "Knock that fucker out." "On it, mate."
One of the gunmen climbed onto the back platform of the Hilux and reached for the Dushka. Bald unloaded a burst at him as he grabbed the handles. The rounds hit him with such force that they knocked him off the back of the pickup. Bald adjusted his aim slightly and directed a continuous stream of rounds on the fuel tank located at the rear of the Hilux. The first six rounds punched through the tank. The next six caused the tank to burst into flames. The three other gunmen who had been running towards the pickup stopped short as the fire consumed the vehicle, the heat and fumes making it impossible to operate the Dushka. They turned away from the burning pickup and scurried towards the rear of the garage 12 meters away. Porter and Bald put down a series of raking bursts on the rebels, dropping all of them. Another 10 rebels advanced from the derelict buildings, reinforcing the dozen or so camped out at the garage. Porter was down to his last two clips. 40 rounds left, he thought. There were more clips downstairs, but if the waves of rebels kept coming, he knew that eventually they would have to start rationing ammo. He looked out across the Cape Road, saw a larger group of rebels emerging from behind the slum dwellings, racing towards the access road. 14 of them. Half of the enemy were equipped with RPGs. They were less than 200 meters from the hotel now, dangerously close.
"Shit," Bald said. "Some more firepower over here,"
Porter called out. Tully and Neelis hustled over from the eastern flank to help deal with the threat, leaving the two Belgians to put down rounds on the rebels at the pavilion. Spraytan and the fourth Belgian continued to brass up the enemies along the southern flank of the hotel. Porter went to fire, but then Tully shouted at him, and Porter ducked low as a rocket fired over his head, missing him by less than a foot. Then his training kicked in. Porter immediately raised his SLR, following the evaporating trail of smoke. He trained the iron sights on a rebel crouching beside one of the slums. Porter dropped the guy as he finished loading another round into the RPG. He jackknifed and fell forward, firing the RPG into the ground. The rocket detonated and sent a violent, hissing surge of soil and debris and body parts high into the air. Another target knelt down to fire his launcher. Porter gave him the good news as well.
"Down there, mate!" Bald roared. 12 o'clock!
As Bald spoke, another RPG thudded into the vacant lower floors of the hotel. Glass shattered. Acrid black smoke swept up and across the roof, burning the operator's lungs and obscuring their view of the targets along the Cape Road. The smoke cleared. Then Porter saw them. 7 rebels, directly below his position on the rooftop. They had reached the turn in the access road leading down to the front of the hotel. In his determination to slot the guys with the RPGs, Porter had missed them. They had already raced past the sandbags and were now zigzagging their way down the left-hand side of the road towards the entrance to the hotel. They were 30 meters away, Porter figured, way ahead of their muckers, closing fast. He raised his gun arm and arced his sights down at the onrushing targets. From a height of 40 meters, the angle was tight, and Porter had to lean over the side of the parapet to get a fix on the enemy. Any moment now they were going to slip out of sight, he knew. He had one chance to nail them. He stilled his breath, depressed the trigger twice. The first round missed. The second hit the rearmost rebel in the groin and sent him dropping to the ground like a hot brick. But the six other rebels disappeared from view before Porter could adjust his aim. They rushed past the shuttered entrance to the underground car park and made directly for the main entrance. Porter spun away from the wall, looked to Tully, said, "Stay here and keep this lot back. Keep firing until no one's left standing. Got it?" Tully nodded. "Where are you going?" "To stop those lunatics from getting inside the hotel."
Neelis overheard them and said,
"I'll come with you. There's six of them. Two of us stand a better chance of stopping them than one."
He grinned.
"Besides, it's a chance to kill more of these savages."
The Belgian looked relaxed, confident, like he wasn't afraid. Porter wondered again about that, but there wasn't time to worry about Neelis and his mates. He thought about the flimsy barricade at the entrance to the hotel and knew it wouldn't take long for the rebels to break through it.
"Unless we hit these fuckers hard and fast, everyone inside this hotel is done for."
He nodded quickly at Neelis.
"Follow me."
Then he turned and hurried across the rooftop towards the stairwell.